Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody, to the Parsha class for Chaye Sarah 5772. Some of you are coming back after a leave of absence, and I must review with you and enlighten you on the new approach for this year, please God. I will say that I was inspired to this approach from the conclusion of our last year's approach. Last year we were studying the basics of Torah reality, and my conclusion with you of all of that is that what we should all be looking for and searching for is to absorb Da'as Torah, Torah knowledge. Torah knowledge. This is something which has been gifted to us by Hashem through our sages, and it is that unique and distinct knowledge that is able to affect us from the most elevated forms of our being down to the lowest. So it's through our mind, our neshama, and our seichel that we are able to affect our nefesh, our instincts and emotions, and our bodies, and the kind of intellectual food that enables us to react in the proper way, in the way that God had intended for us, is this Da'as Torah, this Torah knowledge. Therefore, my inspiration was, and my idea was, to select a dose, if you will, of Da'as Torah in the form of some type of commentary or essay from one of our earlier sages, to actually excerpt it and present it to you on a piece of paper, and it will relate somehow to the Parsha, hopefully, and we will use that source as a springboard for further discussion and a take-home lesson. So this is the first time I presented was a combination of Bereishis and Noach. Our featured sage was Rabbi Luzzatto, one of my favorites. And I have those handouts available if anybody would like. And the topic was Rabbi Luzzatto's exposition of man's purpose in the world. And for Noach, it would be the relationship between Israel and the nations. The second class, Lech Lecha, I wasn't here. So Rabbi Michal Friedman presented an excerpt from Rambam, Maimonides, on mankind's journey through idolatry, or into idolatry, and Avraham's journey out of idolatry. That was an excerpt from Rambam. I do not have a handout for that, but that is available in the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam's writing. Last week was Vayera, and I excerpted several quotes from the Nefesh HaChaim, which was authored by Rav Chaim of Volozhin. Rav Chaim was the prime student of the Vilna Gaon, the Gaon of Vilna, who died in 1799. And the Vilna Gaon was an unparalleled sage at his time, and he instituted many of the practices and norms for Torah life till this day, including the yeshiva movement, including the study of Musar, and including a return and reestablishment of Jewish life in the land of Israel. Well, this is either himself or through his students. Rav Chaim of Volozhin was his student that established the first yeshiva in 1803, modern type yeshiva. Okay, and the topic of Vayera, of our excerpt there from Rav Chaim of Volozhin, was the very high level, spiritual level that was achieved by Avraham at the time of the Akedah. Very, very briefly stated, it was the level of bitul, of nullification of his own personal will to that of Hashem's will. Okay, I do have that available to also, if anyone would like, after class. For Parshas Chayesara, which is well known as the romantic Parsha, because it is the Parsha in which the first marriage is arranged. Actually, the first marriage was arranged by Hashem in the Garden of Eden between Adam and Eve. But that was an easy choice, because she was the only girl and he was the only guy. He did marry her because she was the last girl on earth. Now, in Hayesara, Avraham seeks a match for his son Yitzchak, and he does that through the agency of Eliezer. Eliezer, his trusted servant. Eliezer is chosen to find the wife because Avraham insists on selecting someone from his family, from his hometown, which is outside of the land of Canaan. And Yitzchak is not allowed to leave Canaan because he has been sanctified as a korban, as a sacrifice, by being offered on the altar. So the only solution is for Avraham to send somebody as a proxy to find that wife. The verse that I've selected to be the springboard for our excerpt is one that just expresses that we're talking about marriage. It is chapter 24, pasuk 4. Rather, to my land and to my kindred shall you go and take a wife for my son, for Yitzchak. The springboard which I would like to take from this verse is, as you see on the handout, there we go, Parshas Chayesara on men and women. And I've just for to guide us through this through this discussion, I formulated two questions, each one to be followed by a quote. Our sage for this week is the Maharal of Prague, who was Rabbi Yehuda Lowy, who lived primarily in the 1500s. The Maharal was prolific in his writing of Jewish philosophy. What's unique about him is that he lived over 100 years, more like 200 years before the more contemporary sages that we study often, Rabbi Luzzatto, or the Hasidic Rebbes and the Hasidic works. Those were in the 1700s. In the 1500s, there was not a lot of philosophy being written, at least that we have today. I mean, Maimonides did in the 1200s, but then there was, I guess, somewhat of a dearth. And then the Maharal, who was the leader of the Jewish community in Prague, came out with a whole encyclopedia, I mean, many, many sefarim, on Jewish philosophy. Covers many, many topics. It is a household name for anyone who studies deep Jewish thought, Torah thought. Maharal of Prague is. And what we're going to do today is look at two different excerpts. One from his commentary to Rashi on Chumash, that's called the Gur Aryeh, and the other one from his commentary on Pirkei Avos, which is called Derech Chaim. Alright, so here's so I have formulated a question just to guide us through these sources. I will say that this topic that we're going to discuss today is rather deep and rather abstract. I do want to make a big disclaimer here. While we are going to be talking about the man and the woman, you'll see on my editor's note, under the question, what is the Torah's view on the respective roles of men and women? This is my note, and it's very important. In our discussion, when we speak of man and woman, we refer to the zachar, which means male, aspect, and the nekeva, or female, aspect, which are each Hashem's design and creation. no one individual is pure zachar or nekeva. That means no person is a pure male or a pure female, as each one of us is born of a mother and a father. So that's number one. Number two is that even a single person must seek to embody these two aspects into his or her being. So the ideas that will be presented here, I feel very strongly, are just as applicable to an individual as it is to a couple. This is not about, this is related to, marriage dynamics, but it is also related to the essence of every single human being, every single Jew in particular. So that's my big disclaimer, and I want us to think in those terms. We will use the term man and woman and helpmate. Please try to expand your understanding of these terms in the spirit mentioned here, in that you're referring to the Zachar aspect and the Nekeva aspect, which resides in each one of us. Okay. Maral is commenting on Rashi's comment on the famous verse in Bereshis 2:20, where God expresses his plan to make a woman to accompany Adam. And this is the verse: I will make him a helpmate opposite him. Literally, Ezer Kenegdo. Ezer means a helpmate. Kenegdo means opposite him. And anyone would stop there and think, how do you have a helpmate who's opposite? A helpmate is a helper. Opposite implies opposition, which is the opposite of helping. So Rashi comes along and he addresses the question, but he makes it worse, because Rashi says, if the man is deserving, she will be his Ezer, his helpmate. If not, she will be Kenegdo. She will be opposite him. And then Rashi adds the words, to the point of war. So Rashi is sensitive to the dichotomy here, but he makes it worse, because it's as if Rashi is saying there's no such thing as an Ezer Kenegdo, a helpmate opposite him, because it's either an Ezer or it's Kenegdo. You can't be both at the same time. That's what Rashi seems to be saying. And the Maharal isn't satisfied with that, because the Torah doesn't say, I will make a helpmate or an opponent. He says a helpmate opposite him. So it is one. It is one entity.
An ally and an adversary.
What?
An ally.
An ally and an adversary. And it doesn't even say and. So it's not treating them as two separate entities. So what does this mean? This is what the Maharal is coming to explain in my understanding. And I will take full responsibility for the translation. I have also done a fair amount of editing, and in some cases, cutting and pasting, because the Maharal is quite a verbose writer. Not redundant at all, but there is a lot. So some cases I have actually excerpted within the source. So this is my rendition of the Maharal's comment to Rashi. I will make him the kind of helper that is opposite him, that is a unique kind of helper. This is not like the way a father helps his son, or the way a son helps his father. In those relationships, one never opposes the other. This helper, however, is an Ezer Kenegdo, in that the woman is as important as and equally weighted to the man. It's pointed out by an editor of Maharal, Rabbi Yehoshua Hartman, a contemporary scholar. Only with the woman is a man called Adam. As is stated in Bereshis 5:2, male and female, he created them, and he called their name Adam. Okay, and thus we see the equality. How does she help him? Continues Maharal. He brings it home, and she fixes it up. That's a very pithy statement from the sages. But the implication is both steps are vital. In this way, she is Ezer Kenegdo. If he is undeserving, she will fight him completely. Whereas a son and a father will never fight in this way. In terms of this idea, he brings it home and she fixes it up. Imagine the man is a farmer, and he comes home with a bale of or a bundle of wheat. He comes home. He says, "Honey, I'm home. I brought the wheat, and aren't you proud of me?" And she looks at him, and she looks at the wheat, and she says, "Uh-huh. How are you going to eat it? You can't eat the wheat that way. Give it to me, and I will thresh it, and I will grind it, and I will make bread." Imagine if he comes home and he says, "Honey, sorry, no wheat today." Well, is she just going to take that sitting down? She's going to clobber him over the head. How in the world am I supposed to prepare you a meal if you didn't bring me the wheat? Or take another scenario. How about if he brings home the wheat and he says, you sit down and relax. I'll prepare dinner." And he starts, who knows, doing it in his own way, and it comes out terribly. She hits him over the head again and says, "You don't know how to bake. All you can do is bring home the wheat. You don't know how to bake it." So this is a scenario which on the surface the sages are saying is the relationship between the husband and the wife. Clearly, they're both vital. Without the wheat, there's no bread. Without the baking, there's no bread. And because they are both essential to the process, if there is a breakdown, or if one party is not doing their job, or is doing trying to do the other job, there is going to be opposition and a clash, big time. But let's now expand this phrase, "He brings it home and she fixes it up," with another excerpt from Maharal in his commentary to Pirkei Avos. And this is the part that I think in today's society borders on controversial, and people tend to have strong opinions about this. So please come with me as we read some timeless words from the Maharal, again, according to my humble understanding of it. It says in Pirkei Avos, in chapter 1, Mishnah 5, among other things in the Mishnah, which is a whole paragraph, the phrase, "Ve'al tarbeh sicha im ha'isha," speaking to a man, "Do not speak excessively with a woman." Do not speak excessively with a woman. This is the kind of Pirkei Avos you don't choose to do, like at the Shiva house, you know? Everyone is bent out of shape. But this is how the Maharal explains it. And I think that after we read through this, I'm going to try to bring it home and tie it up with the previous excerpt. "A woman is more concrete than a man. I add that this includes the emotional element, which is found between the material and the intellectual. The man embodies, and this is Maharal's term, tzura, or design, while the woman embodies chomer, material." Again, I inserted a modern-day example. How does a computer work? You've got the software and you've got the hardware. Both are vital. Or maybe a musical example. You've got the composer and then you've got the musician. This is not a denigration of women at all. Nor do the sages come to diminish the love a man should have for his wife. On the contrary, they teach that a man should love his wife as he loves himself. After all, this world is concrete, material, on the level of the woman, which represents chomer, material. He must therefore follow the advice of his wife concerning worldly matters, for she is superior in this area. The statement does not preclude speaking about important worldly matters with her. It does, however, preclude excessive conversation which takes him away from the study of Torah, for that is his area of superiority. And remember, we're speaking about the Zachar aspect and the Nekeva aspect. Remember. The conclusion, therefore, that this is the expanded meaning of he brings it home and she fixes it up. He, or the Zachar aspect within man, must obtain, go out into the world and obtain the spiritual design, which is sourced in our Torah, so that he may bring it to her and she may implement it into their home. She may take the spiritual design and concretize it. Thus, he bears a responsibility towards her to avoid excessive pursuit of chomer. Were a man to occupy his days with chomer, then she is likely to clobber him, because that's like the man who comes home without the wheat. And she says, "What are we going to eat?" So the material aspect of man, as vital as it is likely to say to the man, "Where is your spirituality? If you bring me some spirituality, I'll be able to implement it. But if you're spending all your time in Chomer, there's nothing for me to work with." This is the depth of the matter. According to Maharal, God created two aspects and the embodiment of these two aspects in the man and the woman, which again is found in different, combinations within each individual. But in order for the Jew to live according to the Torah reality in this physical world, it requires a teamwork between the Zachar and the Nekeva. Okay, this is my presentation, and now I invite discussion. Thank you.
I thought I had learned that one reason that the man has to study Torah so much is because a lot of spirituality is naturally in the woman, in the female. And a lot of the studying of the Torah is to bring him
up to her level,
spiritual point where she is.
Okay. So there's a lot of truth to that, but that's I don't think that's the whole story. We say that a lot of what we say is, quite frankly, apologetic, because there's so much of this stereotypical presumption that Judaism has anything to say about women being less than men. And so we feel the need to placate the women by saying, well, the men are just weak and you've got it already. Okay, that is really more coming from apologetics. The truth of the matter is that it's true that a man without Torah is more spiritually devoid than a woman without Torah, but differently. She's not a man, ready-made man. I don't think so. So no, no. But we're speaking now intellectually. Now, she is never the Nekeva is never going to be the man with the Torah. But she doesn't need the Torah to be spiritual. She is in her existence as a more concrete human being, having more of the Chomer aspect. Her spirituality comes from an innate understanding which God gave her what to do with her Chomer. And it can be misguided, by the way. But because her domain is a home, for example, for a woman to be a Torah person, she has to know how to maintain the home. There's certain areas that she needs to be well versed in. She needs to know how to make the home kosher. She needs to know how to create a Shabbos with with all of its trappings. She has to know how to bring up children. She has to know how to be a good wife. That is requires high skill, but it is not as vast as, say, someone who has to study the Talmud and the code of Jewish law on many, many different subjects. She doesn't have to do that. And quite frankly, she doesn't really need to learn the intricacies of why and all the different opinions. She needs to know the practical how to, in order to maintain her position, which is to manage that home environment. The man, on the other hand, he's got a task of mastering the entirety of Torah, and if he doesn't pursue that, he's going to have that much more of a void. So what I'm saying is that it's too simplistic to say that a woman already has what a man has. Yeah, but I'm saying that is, in a sense, that he needs to study Torah because otherwise he won't be spiritual. She's already spiritual. That was what you were saying, I think.
All right, one more thing and then I'll...
Yeah.
Years ago I heard a rabbi, I think I know who, but I'm not going to say which one, who commented that he found it interesting that when he'd be teaching a class and talking about, you know, spiritual things and all, he would notice how the women in the class, their heads were nodding, you know, they got whatever he was trying to say
right away,
whereas the men,
their head was nodding this way.
They you know, really delved into it.
Yeah.
And grasped at least the point of
right.
knowing all the little details.
Right.
Point.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Again, it's because you could take a Talmud lecture and the opposite will happen. The men will get into the arguments and the women will say, why in the world are we discussing this? It's not relevant. So it really, I think what I'm trying to present is a little bit more of, you know, not to knock what he said, because that point has to be brought up, but a little bit more of the sophistication of what is really involved here. There is something called, it's like comparing the software engineer with the man who builds the computers. They are both vital, but they have different jobs and different skill sets. And again, we're not talking about men and women. We're talking about the male aspect and the female aspect. There is an aspect whose job is to absorb the pure intellect and spirituality of the Torah mind, of the Das Torah. And then there is the aspect of taking that as a handed to them in a way, simpler in obtaining that, and then the task, the very difficult skill task of concretizing it and implementing it. Those are the two aspects of Zachar and Nekeva. Thank you. Wendy.
So I see Yitzchak as being the soul of the Jewish nation, and the wife is Rivka, the soul, I understand, of Shabbos. And then we have Sarah, which I think is supposed to be equivalent to Torah. And then when we move down and you look at the Ezer Kenegdo, what I see is that Yetzer HaTov and Yetzer Hara, and the Yetzer HaTov just kind of goes along and everything's okay and everything's cool and copacetic, and the Yetzer Hara is there as the challenger.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that's there to help inspire for us to grow and to learn from the lessons. And I'm also seeing this picture of Ashes Chayil come into the picture now, and that this kind of gives us a bigger picture of how Shabbos actually challenges us to help us grow in all of these different areas.
Mm. Okay. Shkalach.
So what would a woman say today,
mm-hmm.
in 2011,
mm-hmm.
who is accomplished in Chumash?
Mm-hmm.
There's a few accomplished in Talmud also.
Right, right.
Okay, so where do we stand with that, taking this into account? Where women today
right.
are being educated like they were never educated before.
Right, right. So we have to, it's a good question. We have to step back. I remember once Rabbi Ilan Feldman was lecturing on something related to men and women, and a woman raised her hand and said, "Well, if I want to study Talmud, what's wrong with that?" And his answer, this is many years ago, but his answer had to do with something like, what does the Jewish people need? Let's take a step back. Okay, you're asking me, can you study Talmud? Okay, that's a good question. Let's take a step back and say, what does the Jewish people need in order to survive? Right. So clearly from our Torah, and this is the message that we're hearing and we're trying to convey, is that there has to be men and there has to be women. That means there has to be the Zachar aspect, there has to be the Nekeva aspect. And we've got to, if we want to survive, we've got to make sure that these two roles are being, you know, supported and trained and lived enthusiastically. So it's not a question of, am I allowed to study Talmud, right? That's an individual, personal question. We do have to take a look at our educational system. And we do have to say, you know, on a generational level, are we training our people to be, you know, spiritual Zacharim? Are we training our people to be spiritual Nekevot? Do we have these two roles being lived strongly? Quite frankly, it may have turned into a monster. The fact that we have Jewish education the way we do, and we need to, because children are not going to necessarily get it at home, and they're going to come to school, and school is a scholastic environment, and there's academics, and we have to give classes, but we still have to ask ourselves, what is the role that we need to promote? A mother who has studied and is well-versed, she can be a teacher. She can teach her children. But the fact that women are, you know, capable, I can learn Gemara better than my husband, you know, what are we going to do with that? That's unfortunate. We need to get our husbands to go learn, He needs motivation. He's not doing it. Maybe you can use your feminine influence and get him to do what he's supposed to do. So the fact that things are the way they are, it's just a challenge for us to review it and to check it and to really and hold it up against the Da'as Torah, which is, what is it that we need? Hana, we need your some of your Bina to shed light on this.
I was listening to a lecture by Rabbi Kellerman, and he was kind of facetiously talking about how women don't need to know as much Torah or whatever. And then he said, well, let's see. What do they need? Well, they need to definitely go through the Mishnah Berurah, because there's a lot that applies to women there. Mm-hmm. And he broke down how long that takes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and they do shopping, so they have to actually learn Hoshen Mishpat, so they know how to do the shopping and all that stuff. By the time he got done with it, you've got 4 years worth of really learning. And the thing is, we're so blind right now, we don't know what we should be learning. A Hoshen Mishpat?
I don't even
really know what that
is.
But the fact that there is stuff out there that we should be learning, it's like you go to college and you have your major, but you can't get into those classes until second or third year, and you have to fill it in with all this junk filler stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to be Jewish people, and we're just picking courses that really have not necessarily relevant to what we're going to need to be, which is what, like you were saying, you know, we need the Nekeva, we need the Zahor, and we need to know what parts of those apply to each one of us so that we can fulfill our role rather than just take electives.
Right.
It seems to me this is almost the first of the call and prod that we've talked about before. Someone who says, you know, I want to learn that because it's good for me,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to saying, well, what do I need to do to make the whole more healthier body?
Right.
It almost seems to me that, you know,
Everything can be broken into klal and prat, and absolutely, and the zachar is that's beautiful. I mean, this verse in the Torah. I mean, it's not Parshas Bereishis, so that's not our verse. But zachar unekeva bra'am, he created them male and female. Vayikra es shemam Adam, and he called their name Adam. I mean, doesn't that speak volumes?
So why do you assume it's the woman that was created to help the man? Or vice versa?
Because the roles are that he brings it home and she fixes it up. Which means he initiates the process by bringing home the raw, the material. I'm not going to go into any details, but the way that a baby is made is exactly the same pattern. But that's why she's the helper, because she takes what he brings and she makes it concrete. That's why. But it's not because, that's exactly the Maharal's point in the beginning, it's not like he's the master and she's the servant. A father and a son, in which case, he's not a kinegdo. He's not someone that would stand equally to the father or stand up to the father. He's just a subservient man and woman. Is kinegdo. They are standing like this. There's a software engineer and the hardware engineer, and one cannot be without the other.
That's my point.
Yeah.
It sounds like the way it's presented here is that the woman was made to help him.
To help him.
As opposed to them being each other's helpmates.
Because
once they are both on this earth, they're both necessary for each other's survival.
She needs the material to work on.
Right.
He is the material she works on.
Well, he's the design.
I'm pointing more to the word help. What do you mean?
Her job is to be the helper. Her role is to take what he brings and to implement it. So that's what means a helper. That's not the other way around. But that has nothing to do with importance, and that's nothing to do with dominant versus subservient.
I concentrate on the word help.
Yeah, what you're saying is he's the essential one, and she's an auxiliary.
She's
and that's not what it means.
you know, that she's subordinate in some sort of way.
Right, and that's, the Maharal is coming to preclude from that understanding. And that would be like the father and the son. A son is the understudy of his father. The wife is not the understudy of her husband. She is kenegdo. She is one who is just as powerful, and if he doesn't do his job, she will oppose him to the point of war. She is his equal. But she is called the helper because her job is to take what he brings and to fix it, to implement it. And that's why it's called Ezer.
You keep thinking of both aspects within a human being.
Yes.
Then it works. Then you just got to keep reminding yourself of both aspects, and then it can be done. You just can't keep separating it into male and female.
Right.
Aspects are there within all of us.
Right, and that might be the way that we can internalize it. Let's say you've got this brilliant guy who's brilliant, and he keeps on writing these amazing pieces, but he can't play the instrument. So it's not concrete. So
just the words to the music.
What's that?
He writes the music. She puts
it. Okay. That, or she plays the music. But we, in order to accomplish anything in this world, because this is spiritual, physical, spiritual and material world, we've got to have the both aspects.
But you can find that in one place.
You can, okay. So now you're challenging and saying, why then do we need even the external roles of male and female? Why do we have to have two different people? Why can't we just have a world full of people where each one is playing out the Zachar role and the Nekeva role? Okay, that's a good question.
Well, anybody, like Adam Harishon was before.
Yeah, and Hashem said that's not good.
Yeah.
So let's try to. That's a great question. A very apt follow up to this, and let's try to see if we can answer it. Why do we have to have, therefore, men and women? Any ideas?
There's no way to proliferate. You can't.
God could have thought of another way.
He could have
created a baby machine, and it would keep on turning out.
We clone ourselves like corals.
Yeah, cloning. That's don't worry. Each person will maintain balance internally. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
I mean, Dr. Fried's got a good proposition.
But didn't he?
Be a lot cheaper, I'll tell you that much.
Separate Hava out, because at that point, Adam didn't really have anything to truly give to. Exactly.
Why does he need that?
Because he needs to emulate Hashem, who's the giver.
Right.
That's what we're here for.
Okay, so maybe overarching Zachar and Nekeva is the element of divinehood,
divinity.
The Tzelem Elokim, divinity, thank you, whereby each individual must be a giver. So there has to be relationship. There has to be a duality, not just one. God says it is not good for man, even if he does have the Zachar and the Nekeva, it's not good for him to be a single entity without someone to learn how to be like God and to give. Maybe.
It seems to me from other things that I've read that bottom line, this whole existence thing is about relating to Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
And since Hashem isn't something that we can touch and feel,
mm-hmm.
we can't really learn how to relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had, you know, 100% Nekeva and Zahor within us and all this kind of stuff, we'd just be relating to ourself, which
mm-hmm.
isn't coming out of ourself at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
to split this up
right.
is to say, no, you have to learn how to relate.
Right.
And in learning how to relate to this other person, you can learn how to come out of yourself and relate to Hashem.
Very good. Rashi does say on the words, it is not good for man to be alone. Rashi does not say he'll be too lonely or he won't have anything to eat. Rashi says he will begin to think of himself as a god. He will begin to think of himself as, Rashi says, he will say, man will say, Hashem is the one and only, up in the upper realms. I am the one and only in the lower realms. I'm like him. I'm the God of the earth. And Hashem says, Lo tov, it is not good for man to think of himself as so independent that he can actually consider himself on the same level as God. He needs to know that he needs another. So it's both the giving aspect, but also the humility of knowing that he needs a helpmate. He can't do it alone. That also would be missing if we just had individuals.
Well, does God have a feminine and masculine?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Shekhinah, the divine presence, is the feminine side. Shabbos is the feminine side. Shabbos Malkasa. Yes, yes, very good.
He can have that
because he is independent.
He can have it.
Right.
But all of us on this earth may have three quarters of one.
Right.
Or 90% of one.
Right.
And we all have a little of the other. And it's to retain all, we have to have a partner.
Right. Very good.
A little short comment on the translation into English from the Connecto.
Yes.
In the English translation of King James Bible, it says a help meet to him. Not a help mate.
Meet?
A help meet. M-E-E-T rather than a help M-A-T-E.
I never heard that word.
In the authorized King James Bible, I will make her a help meet for him.
Wow.
Come together. Meet meaning like appropriate.
Aha, help meet.
You know, help. It's always was an awkward kind of
word.
Help meet. We always use the word help mate.
Right.
But actually, translation is help. M E E T.
Wow. Okay, Dina.
No, just one other thing. This 12,000, and it's related to what I had said.
Yes.
In the beginning, I had read once. After a woman gives birth. If I remember correctly, it said after 40 days she succumbs. If it was a boy that she gave birth to, after 40 days, I think she comes and
comes back to the temple, brings an offering.
For
a girl to 80.
It's 80 days.
Yeah.
And one thing that I had read was that one theory was that the reason is because when something, and I don't know what the right word would be, spiritual, holy, something like that, is removed from something, it becomes more
void.
Impure. And it
yes.
takes a longer time.
Yes.
So
yes.
That was an explanation for the 80 and the 40.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. The female has life-giving capabilities. And thus, the absence of that creates more of an intuitive. That was something I think that was Rav Simpson Rafa Hirsch popularized that idea. Yasher Koach. Thank you all. I hope that we walk away with something here.
The women did everything. The men studied Torah and the women did all the business. They were the balabustas. Is there a word like that in English? Like balabustas?
What is your reaction to that? Did the man not work?
Well, it's somewhat cynical, but this is what goes on in Jerusalem, where boys study Torah and their young wives go to work.
So that is not the ideal. That is not the ideal from a source material point of view. That is not the ideal. What is ideal is that the man should work and study Torah. And the practicality of that over many years and decades and centuries was that I'm just giving you a historical background as to why things developed into the way they are, and as all developments, they're not perfect. But what was happening over the many years was because of the influences of the exile experience, men were falling away from Torah study to the point of dangerous levels. And so a movement arose which encouraged men to study more so than they, almost exclusively. because otherwise there would be nothing. It was like an emergency measure, if you look at it that way. Many more contemporary rabbis have argued that the emergency is past, and we can start going back to normal, you know, get out of the intensive care, if you will, and go into a regular mode of existence. But habits die hard. But that was never meant, designed by, you know, by early sources to be that way.
Is it not a pattern that exists?
It does exist. Yeah. There are it's a cultural thing. There are cultures in which the men are excused from working. Now, even in those cultures, it's not forever. It's something that might, particularly in America, there's much more of an accepted pattern that after the husband learns for a certain number of years and it becomes impossible for the wife to shoulder any of the financial responsibility, then he has to leave the yeshiva and he has to go to work.
Yes.
But yeah, that is something that has developed over time.
Next question.
Yeah.
Loi, is this the same guy that made the golem?
Yes.
It is
yep.
The same one.
Same one.
He was a forerunner.
Sometimes the wife says that the husband is like a golem. Okay, Yasher Koach.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.